Okay, Guten Erev Shabbos. This week's Parsha is Parshas Emor. The title of today's shiur is a little bit of a different kind of title. It's the hidden spiritual world around us and the startling discoveries of epigenetics. Now, we'll talk about epigenetics a little bit later and why it's so startling and how it relates to what we're going to see in this week's Parsha. So, the beginning title of this year, the beginning of the title is the hidden spiritual world. So we know there are all kinds of things that we don't really see, and yet, based on our tradition, based on the Torah, we understand that there are things going on and effects and ramifications of what we do that might be in some way perceived or felt, and oftentimes not perceived and felt. And there's a very interesting Pliyakar on this week's parsha that speaks about one aspect of this, and we'll talk about how it all ties together to Shmiras Einayim and other kinds of important spiritual efforts. So the pasuk in Perichof Aleph, pasuk Zayin, the pasuk says, "Ish mizar acho asher yiyya bomum." Now this is referring to the Kohanim, that the Kohanim that have a mum are not to perform the Avodah and the Beis HaMikdash if they have a mum. And the Torah spells out the various mumen, which we won't get into right now, the various defects, physical defects in appearance. Now, the Kli Yakar raises an interesting question. He says the order in the Psukim are reversed. In this pasuk, it says, "Ish mizaracha asher yiyah bo mum." It says that a person that will have a mum in him. It's kind of a strange lashon. He will have a mum. Either you have one or you don't have one. If he will have one, why would he be disqualified? Because he will have one. When he has one, he'll be disqualified. There's a pasuk later on where it says mum bo, the mum is with him, which is present tense, which makes more sense. Someone that has a mum is disqualified. So the Kli Yakar says something that is very surprising and very interesting. And he says as follows, that hakadmonim hoye bekiyin b'chachmas, the ancients, the early ones, the people from the Dor HaMidbar, the people maybe from the time of Yoshua, from the time of the Shoftim, I don't know when he's referring to exactly, but our ancient ones, they had a special kind of wisdom. And this wisdom allowed them to look at a person, and by looking at a person, they could perceive their inner deficiencies that was reflected on their face. And so he says, "Hayoyodin b'chol mum shenishava ba'adam terem heyoso." They would actually know about a mum, about a blemish that would physically appear in the person before it appears, because they would detect some deficiency in the person that would ultimately erupt in a physical manifestation, much as, like, let's say, for example, tzaras or the Zav is a physical disease that is manifested from some kind of spiritual deficiency. So all the mumen that come out are really a manifestation of some kind of spiritual deficiency. So he says, for example, he says perhaps somebody who takes a bribe, because it says Ashochad Yavarini Pikrim, because the bribe makes him not look at the facts, maybe something will affect his eyesight. He doesn't say this, but say somebody speaks Lashon Hara, maybe he will experience some difficulty with his teeth or mouth. He's not telling you for sure, because he says that we don't understand this Chachma in the same way. But he said that the ancients, they would be able to look at the person's face. They would see some tchuna rash yesh bekirbo hapogemis. They would see some bad quality by looking at the face. And from there, they would come to anticipate already there's certain blemishes and physical deformities that would manifest. But that's not all. He doesn't just say that, but he says, therefore, in their day, they would disqualify a Kohen who was going to have a mum, even if he didn't get the mum yet. And that's why it says, Asher Yiyabo mum, that the mum is going to be, he's puzzled already, because they knew that he had this deficiency in character, which would manifest itself ultimately within a relative amount of time. I don't know when or how, but it will manifest itself, much as, let's say, for example, the Gemara talks about the Sota that drinks the water of the Sota. Some got ill right away, and some got ill later. So maybe it may take time for certain physical manifestations of spiritual problems to manifest themselves, but they will, at least in the ancient times, which today we don't have tzaras, we don't have the waters of the Sota don't work, so we don't have this spiritual sensitivity. But they did, and they knew it would happen, and therefore the Kohen would be possible. And that's why it says, Asher Yiyabo Mum, that there will be a Mum, because he's already disqualified when they know it's going to happen. Then he says the other Pasuk, this is just parenthetical, because it's not so related to the Shir, he says the other Pasuk, which says Mum Bo, this speaks present tense, that's talking about blemishes that a person is born with. That could be not due to their actions, but due to their mazel, or maybe due to their parents and such. Anyway, so that's the Kleyaker. So you see a very interesting thing from him. You see that there is not only is there a hidden spiritual world, not only do the things that we do have an impact in the spiritual world that we can't necessarily see, but also those things can actually manifest themselves in a physical manner and have impact upon a person. Now, the Gemara Nedarim and Daf Chaf Amud Aleph speaks about this very specifically when it comes to the act of conception. And the Gemara over there talks about various, nefarious, gluttonous, hedonistic activities that if the sexual act is performed with these various improprieties, then it will have an effect on the formation of the child, and so the child may be deformed either physically and, certainly spiritually, like, for example, like we know, let's say, a mamzer or a chalal, which is also in this week's parsha, a chalal, these are people that, despite their best abilities, they have some spiritual problem with them. Even though they could be very learned, and the Gemara says, "Mamzer Talmud Chacham Kodem LaKohen Am Haaretz." You give cover to a Mamzer a Talmud Chacham before a Kohen who's an Am Haaretz. So we're not talking about their own Madrega, but somehow spiritually there is something wrong with them, and they're defective, and they don't marry into the Kahal because of that. Anyway, so spiritual things really leave an impact, and they leave an impact. The act of the formation of a child is so critical that the spiritual mood and the spiritual state of the man and woman has a direct impact on how the child will develop and what the child will develop into. So now, this is where we get to the interesting scientific piece. Not that you need proof from science to the Torah. The Torah has been around for a long time, and many times things that appear to be scientifically true later on are not. So I'm not a big fan of saying, you see from science, it shows you whatever. But like gematrias, the Ramban says a person can't make up their own gematrias. But we do it all the time. Like gematrias, if it shows you something interesting, and you understand that there's limitations to it, and they don't really prove anything, really, they're still very useful and inspiring. So when we talk about, science, and we see in some way science indicates a similarity to a spiritual reality, I think that it could give strength, and also they have to understand, we should understand that the whole world, the Vaidya Stakul the Oraisu of Bor Olama, the whole world is created, is modeled after the blueprint of the essence of the Torah. So even a physical scientific fact should represent some deeper truth. Even something as silly as that pi is 3.1415, etc., all those numbers, in every single part of the universe, pi comes out to the same calculation. What that means, I don't know, but it's part of the design. It means something. You can darshan pi if you want to. I don't know what you would find in it, but it's put there. The number means something. Anyway, so let's talk about the science of this. So here's the thing. You know, when you hear Gemaras like this, you say, okay, you know, it's a spiritual thing. Like we say, by Sota, Metzora, we're not on that level. It doesn't have any application to us. I mean, we know today, right, there's genetics. You look at the mother's genes, the father's genes, and they affect the child in different ways. And, you know, many people hold that before you get married, you should have some kind of genetic testing. People use Dor Yesharim because they don't want to pass on genetic diseases to their children, all those wonderful things. So we know, we theorize today that genetics are a reality. So we got this, we have this idea here that genetics are really important. And what does it really mean? What does it really mean? If the genetics are important, then whether the child is healthy is going to come from the genetics and the mother's nutrition. What is the spiritual issues that the Gemara Nedarim talks about? We're not on that much rega. It doesn't affect us, someone might say. But here's the really, really cool thing. There's something called epigenetics, and this is a relatively recent field. And what epigenetics means is it's a new field of study that they began to realize that it's not so simple that you have genes and the genes, you know, program the cells and express them. So a person has blue eyes because they have a gene for blue eyes, or they have red hair because they have genes for red hair. But actually, the environment interacts with the organism, and somehow or another, the experience of the organism activate and turn on or shut off certain genes. And so actually the genes are activated and expressed by experiences that happen to the person, and not only that. That would be enough. But amazingly, somehow or another, those experiences are encoded into the genetic material and passed on to the next generation. And they did an experiment that had been duplicated a number of times and proven in a number of ways. So with mice. So mice have sensitivity to odor, as you know, and they took a particular odor, and they would pair that odor with a shock and give the mouse an electric shock while the mouse is paired to the odor. And then subsequently, of course, as you know from Psychology 101, you know, operant conditioning, if you put that odor in front of the mouse, even without the shock, the mouse gets startled and scared because it already was trained to respond to that odor. Another odor, it doesn't get scared of. Only that odor that it was trained. 10 days later, they bred those mice. Amazingly, the next generation of mice passed on that same sensitivity to the odor, and only that odor would cause the mice to be startled. It was encoded somehow in the genes. And how that's done? Well, different receptors in the nose for different odors can be larger or smaller and have higher concentrations. And when they tested these mice, they noticed that they had more concentration of these receptors. Not only that, it carried on into the third generation. So the generation of mice that were exposed to the odor developed a sensitivity because of operant conditioning. That was passed on genetically to their children and to their grandchildren. They even were worried somehow or another, maybe it wasn't genetics. Maybe somehow or another the parents, even though they're just mice, communicated somehow to their offspring to be afraid of this odor. So they wanted to rule that out. The next time they did the experiment, they took the same mice that were exposed to the odor and developed this anxiety about the odor, and they instead of breeding them, they did artificial insemination. I kid you not, this is the real thing. They did not breed these mice directly. They inseminated female mice with the male sperm from those mice, and the original parents had nothing to do. The fathers who were exposed to the shock had nothing to do with the offspring. The offspring still had the same exact sensitivity. So we even see scientifically, incredibly, there is this ability to encode life experience back into the genes. So now we shouldn't be so surprised. We shouldn't be so surprised that the nature of the bond and the nature of the connection between the husband and wife have an impact on the child. Now, aside from the fact that psychologically, if there's shown bias, then there's going to be a greater connection. But that's psychological. But we're talking about something deeper. We're saying that somehow or another in the act of conception, spiritually and physically, because the Gemara talks about physical deformities, and physically, there is an impact based on the nature of the connection. Now, there's two aspects of this connection. This is important because people get lost and get confused over here. Certainly the Gemara is stressing the importance of having a degree of kedusha and spirituality at the moment of conception. And they talk about in Shulchan Aruch that you could be thinking holy thoughts and thinking Torah during the act. It's not like going to the bathroom. And for someone who's on that level and really feels that they're able to have a proper bond and sexual connection with their wife, and they want to also have spiritual thoughts, this could bring great benefit to the potential child that's being conceived. But there's also something else that gets lost in the picture. It's not just about the spirituality that's going on in your head or in your spouse's head. It's also about the nature of the bond. Meaning, and this is a lot easier to achieve because not all of us are going to be thinking Torah and Psukim while we're in the act of zivug with our wives. But the second point is, it's about the nature of the bond. If there is a strong love and connection that allows the powers of the neshamas of the husband and wife to go into and in some way nourish and foster the development of the child, of his I would assume soul and body. And what's the proof? I'm not just making this up. You will see things like this in the Ramban and Shaar HaKadusha and in the Bali Nefesh of the Ravid, but it's really straight in the Gemara, because the Gemara, the Gemara says one of the prohibitions that we follow is that a woman is not supposed to directly demand relations from her husband. It's considered brazen. A woman is supposed to be more modest. So we hold that a woman should in some way indicate she can be obvious. She can indicate that she's interested, by being seductive or flirtatious or, wearing something that shows that she's interested, whatever it is. But she's not supposed to actually physically demand it. That's considered, according to the Torah, too brazen. So, as usual, the way the Gemara comes up with ideas is by raising contradictions. So the Gemara raises a contradiction because there's a teaching. Ko adam she'ishto tovato, any man whose wife demands him, having lebanim shafilu b'dorosho Moshe Rabbeinu lo haya kamosam, he will have children that are even greater than the generation of Moshe Rabbeinu. So that's really strange. I thought you're not allowed to demand. So the Gemara gives an answer. No, this is talking about the Maratze Artsuye, that she makes it clear, like I said, she hints that she wants it. Now Rashi says, this is important, Marla, we talked to her, she shows that she's interested, and kagon Leah, like Leah did with Yaakov. It was clear that Leah was interested. And me'ahi nafki bona me'alya. From that, you'll have wonderful, upstanding children. So what's going on? What's going on is that the quality of the bond, if the woman is desirous and the man fulfills the mitzvah and pleases her and connects with her in a deep way, let's leave alone all the fancy schmancy spiritual stuff. We're talking about loving her properly, responding to her need and loving her. It produces in some way a superior child. And we see from epigenetics that this may very be, you know, this scientifically even might be completely understandable. Somehow or another, the experience activates and turns on certain genes and affects the formation of the child. So, you know, I'm a big fan of focusing on practical and things that we can do. You know, you look in Shulchan Aruch and there's many, many levels and demands for how spiritual the act can be. And this is something that on a practical level, a person really needs to consult with a Rebbe, an experienced Rebbe, and not overdo it, because you do need to have a reasonable and satisfying sex life. However, this piece, the second part, is very practical and very doable, which is that to create a tremendous bond of love and affection during the act and do whatever that takes to do that, and one will be rewarded. One will be rewarded with healthy and special children. Now, let me just end off with one last observation. In the beginning of the parsha, the pasuk lists all the different relatives that the Kohen can become tummy for, because really, right, a Kohen is not allowed to get tummy, but it says, La'aviv, imo, la'achiv, his mother, his father, his brother, la'chosu ha'basula, la'vno ha'bito, his unmarried sister, his son, his daughter. Somebody's missing. Who's missing? The wife is missing. It doesn't say the wife in the pasuk. However, Chazal darshan, because the pasuk starts out with ki im l'sheiro ha'karov elav. He only can become tameh for the flesh that is related to him, la'aviv l'imo, and then it lists all the different relatives. Now, the pasuk pshat is that it's an introductory sentence. It's saying that one can become tameh for the relatives that are close to him, and that means the brother, the sister, the son, the daughter, etc. That's the pasuk pshat. But the drash is, Chachamim say, ein she'eru elo ishto. When it says the flesh that is close to him, what does that mean? It's an allusion to the wife. It's referring to the wife, so the husband could also be metame for his wife. Halacha l'maisa, we hold that way. Now, the question is, let's go with this drasha. Why did the Torah waste words? Why did the Torah waste words and say, L'sheiro ha'karov elav, three words, when it could have just said the word ishto? I mean, ishto is one word. Ishto is just one word, right? So why did the Torah go out of the way to say it that way? So this is what I believe is going on. I believe that the Torah is saying that you got to look for the wife. You got to darshan. You have to find her. You have to pay attention to her. Now, if you pay attention to her and you look out for her and you care about her, then she's a relative. Not only is she a relative, she's actually the most closest relative, and that's why She'eiro HaKorov Elav is mentioned first in the pasuk. But if you're not paying attention, and you're not looking out for her, and you don't notice her, and you don't even know it's She'eiro HaKorov Elav, you don't even see it in the pasuk, then she's not your relative. She's the farthest from you. You're not even related to her. And so that's a hidden message in the parasha. Hold on one moment. I'm going to shut off the recording.
Hello?